So who are you?
Well, my name's Eric Lee.
Forget the cameras. Everybody forgets that. They all
look at the person.
So who are you?
I'm Eric Lee. Yep. I'm a product manager for In Visual Studio Team System, looking after Team Foundation Server.
And you bought us dinner, and so you're a cool guy.
Once upon a time, he was my PM.
Once upon a time, yes, I was PM on the Profiler team.
And we're here with a bunch of other people. So who are we here with, and what's the occasion?
Well, over to my left is John Cunningham. He's one of our distinguished developer leads.
He's got a promotion on video.
It's not just dinner.
Mark can run out of budget though to give me it.
That's right. Well, I talked to you last week then. And then to my other side is Jeff Beeler, our
Release manager / program manager / I don't know, conscience /
fix it man.
Fix it man.
Excellent.
Yeah, and then certainly not last but not least, John Lawrence, developer manager, Team Foundation Server.
Great.
So I do thank you guys for getting together, taking out the time to just kind of discuss, you know, casually what it's been like now that we've all used Team Foundation Server internally for, I guess, 12 months or a little bit more than 12 months, per se.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So just, you know, cultural impact, productivity.
Now, you guys aren't all on the same team, right? Because I think we were talking before.
Me personally, I am not on the server team. These guys all... Well, except Jeff's not. Jeff looks after us all.
Jeff is like on every team. Jeff is the guy that makes sure that everything on the product actually happens. He just makes sure
we will actually make it out of the door with a product.
Yep, it's my fault if it works or if it doesn't. So.
I'm going to sign all my bugs to you.
Okay.
I work in the client tools, so I work for things like Profiler, code coverage, that type of thing. John looks after server PCs, so quite different. Right. So although we're all part of the one team system family, we're each, you know, using each other's tools in different ways and shapes and at different times in the product cycle.
Right, and we already did a Channel 9 video on the source code management features, basically. Mm-hmm. So this is more of how you guys are actually using the tool internally, right?
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully we can talk about how we've, the joys and the pains of dog fooding our product. Do people know the term dog fooding?
We use it a lot on Channel 9, but you might explain it again just in case.
So I don't know who the term originally was coined by, but it comes from the phrase, you've got to be able to eat your own dog food.
It was Purina executives who had to eat their own dog food.
Honestly, it's just quite unpalatable. at times,
TFS,
TFS.
One.
So no matter how disgusting the taste is, we commit to using our own tools internally before we're ready to ship, because it's the one of the best ways that we can find out whether or not they're ready to go.
One of our major litmus tests.
That's right. And I was talking to Eric earlier today, and we've been using these tools since for the Team Foundation team since July of last year, so that's over 14 or 15 months. And we brought John's team online in about March of this year, so that's John's looking at me
really?
Like, what?
No, I thought it was earlier than that. But
well, so I think we moved you over to source control earlier than that.
That's true.
Maybe in February or so.
No.
You want to say earlier than that?
I want to say earlier, because I think we did it in the M33 ZBB time frame, which won't mean anything to anyone on Channel 9, but it means something to Jeff and I as we're talking three-letter acronyms.
I remember that going on when I was still on the team.
So exactly.
Left like November?
Yeah, November. Yeah.
No, it wasn't in November. For you guys, for EDT?
I thought so.
I know what we're talking about.
I think you're
confused. When did we move to 25?
In November.
Oh, this conversation's going to go downhill if you can't agree on when you
I remember the EFT guys did the biggest evaluation.
Yes, that's right.
Like,
okay
this is how it models our private branch. You're is right. How they had. And we were slightly different from
so we did an attitude refresh on December 15th or so. We took Team Foundation first, and then we moved you guys over like right after the first of the year. That's true.
So we've been actually dog fooding bits of Team Foundation even earlier than that. So the guys in North Carolina have
that's
been
right.
using Team Foundation, or Hatteras as the code name was, for their version control for much longer.
That's right, since like March previous.
Yeah. And similarly, we've been in Currituck. We've been using...
What's Currituck?
Currituck is a lighthouse.
You had no idea how much joy I had talking to people about the lighthouse code names.
So Currituck was the code name for the work item tracking component. So the team that was working on work item tracking with dog fooding, those components.
That's right.
So we would do these. We have triage. You've sat in on a triage with Channel 9 folks before, so people know about it. But these are meetings where you get somebody from dev, test, and PM in a room together, looking at the incoming bugs and making decisions about what priority they are, whether or not we need to fix them now or ever, whether it's by design or just making some tough decisions. So we sit in a room. We use Team Foundation to go through all of the bugs and work out what we should do with them.
And actually, our triage process is much improved with using Team Foundation because of the Excel. No, the Excel integration I will give you. I mean, it's a very different model from what we were used to, but triaging our bugs in Excel made a huge difference to just how I approached.
It would be a lot easier, yeah.
It's much easier. I have one set of bugs sitting in Excel, ready to go. I have all the fields that I care about how I'm going to change them after I've done triage, and that's how I bash through them.
That's interesting.
That's right. You showed me in the video where you can change things right in Excel, and it changes it back.
That's how I do triage. That's how all of my triages were done.
Yeah. So how's that help you? Like, what's the advantage to using Excel in that regard?
Because I can more clearly see exactly the impact of my triage. Mm-hmm. Right. I then take that and I cut from Excel and I put that in my mail that says, here are the triage results, which I used to try and mine from PS in a very painful way.
So being able to put it in the email, that's a good thing.
Right. We communicated every day, this is the result of triage. And that, what's in Excel is lost as soon as you publish it back, right? It's very hard to re-get that query out of what did I do in triage?
That's
whereas if I do that in Excel, it's right there, and I just copy it and put it in the email.
That's pretty cool. I hadn't thought about doing that. We use one of the views that we have in Currituck, we call triage view. It's not actually the official name. It's called results list view. Because our internal tool that we had before Team Foundation, Product Studio was the internal name, and it was divided into two panes. It wasn't divided into two panes. You had two panes. One where you build up your query. So you build up a query of finding which bugs that you're interested in for your triage session.
Yeah.
And then you'd end up with a list of bugs at the bottom half of the window. And then you double click on an item in the list and it brings up the bug in another separate window.
Right. Yeah.
And so you'd either end up with lots of windows open and bugs that you weren't ready to save yet. And it was a kind of clumsy model.
Right.
So one
you
of the things that we did...
Letter, yeah.
So one of the views that we introduced in Team Foundation was this triage view. So instead of always having the query defined, you tend to find that you write the query once and you keep that around for a while or you share it out. So there's no need to have that displayed for editing all the time. So that is hidden. And instead, you've got a split view where you've got a list of all the bugs in the query. And then you can see the bug in a form in the second half of the pane.
How common is the Microsoft development methodology to what everyday developers out in the real world do? Is there a commonality? Is there not very much common? Because you guys have done research with...
There's a bunch of different terminology there, just having been out a couple of weeks in the field there. People have different names for bugs. They have different ways in which they see the life cycle of bugs going through. We have a very, fixed workflow of, bug comes in, it gets triaged, it's then resolved, it can be resolved, fixed, or in any number of ways, we won't fix it. And then it's closed. But out in the field, I notice customers have, sometimes much more complicated workflows in terms of, well, is this defect going to be accepted by the business analyst, and is it really that important, and so on. So there's a much more complex workflow and quite different. But some of the basic principles of the entities of everyone has a defect or a bug or something like that. But that's one of the strengths of Team Foundation, is being able to modify those templates and those workflows to exactly what your process is,
which is exactly what we've done. Right, we've taken there are two methodologies in the box: one for agile methodology,
MSF for agile.
And then there's MSF for CMMI.
What's
CMMI? CMMI is Capability Maturity Model. It's a way
and
to...
It's now got I on the end, and I must admit, it used to be just CMM.
Yeah, that's
CMMI,
right.
And I'm sure it stands for something different.
I don't... I'm sure somebody will send us a piece of email.
Yeah, it's a way, to describe the maturity of a process in terms of how repeatable it is and how well documented it is.
And there are different levels, and our methodology is four or five, I think.
Five? Or CMML?
There are five levels.
There are five levels.
And we get to level three.
We get to level three with our...
methodology
that we ship in the box. Okay. That's right. Anyway, so back to what I was saying before.
Sorry, I have to ask.
So we took the Agile one and we customized it for our own usage. And John was mentioning Product Studio, and so we looked at the form and the workflow that was involved there and ported that and customized it for our own use. And so we have a bug form that the customers will never use because it's much more complicated and evolved and... it's got a lot of noise in it, too.
It is. Jeff and I were actually tidying that up today because we there are some important fields on the bug form that we're using to track down all of the bugs that are going to impact our UI. We're calling it a visual freeze date, which is...
Friday.
So we've got 2 days. And this
what are you doing here?
This is to lock down any... fix any bugs that are going to impact any text on the user interface. And we had a field on one of the tabs somewhere which said whether or not a bug we thought was going to impact the visual... freeze or not, but it's hidden away. And meanwhile, in your face at the top of the bug form is a bunch of fields that I don't even understand what they refer to. Do you?
No, I don't. That's why I got rid of them.
Yeah.
But the other interesting thing about that, you were talking about these fields that we picked up from another tab. We created a new tab, I don't know, a couple months ago, mm-hmm. called the Ask Mode tab. And we're pretty excited about it because in flight, during our project, we said, hey, wait a minute, we could use our system more intelligently. Previously in Product Studio, what you'd have to do is during ask mode, which is when you take a bug to a ship room and try to argue for people to take it, and you have to have certain kinds of sign off and
it,
all
it
that
should
sort
be called
of
beg
thing.
Mode.
The beg mode.
Beg mode.
Ask and beg mode.
Yeah. Do you buy the decision maker's lunch?
Sure. Sometimes money does transfer hands. Sometimes
you know,
people will bring
please, in. I don't want to think about it anymore. Okay? It's all over now. Okay, let's put it behind us and not think about it until next time.
But anyway, we had this very crude process, which was basically take this Word template and paste it into each one of the bugs that we were trying to argue for. And then there were all these little fields you had to fill out. It was perfect for a form-based system like we've got in Team Foundation. So we created a new tab that had each one of those with drop-downs for the various values, including sign-off for the people that could sign off, and then a place for to explain what the customer scenario was and all that. And now it's so easy when you ask somebody to fill out that template, it's right there. They don't have to go find it. It's well formed. It's really been nice. So that's
and gives us the opportunity to mine the data
exactly
in a more intelligent way than trying to go to every bug and open mm-hmm. every Word document and understand it. Right.
There's absolutely no way when we were pasting that information in a Word document to search that information.
Absolutely
it was
not.
Just useless. Yeah. Whereas now all of those fields we can track them, do queries on them.
The other thing I was talking to customers about was all of the different criteria for sign-off and how we created specific work items for those, because those are entities they're assigned to people, and for the longest time beforehand we were using either PS with custom text things again that we couldn't mine correctly and so on.
That's
so
right. Well, and those things have a different workflow.
Exactly.
Right? Bugs go through active, resolved, closed, it's real well defined, but these sign-offs are very different. And so it's really been nice that we can design a whole new work item type that has just those fields we're interested in and the workflow that people are interested in as well. We created custom reports around those. I think that was a real nice success story for Dog Foodie.
Yeah. How did the new tool compare to the old way?
I guess.
I can see John's now having flashbacks.
Yeah, I mean, a very painful manual process, really, in terms of, we talk very much about the value of integration in the team mm-hmm. system, mm-hmm. but going back to the old way was, two or three different tools and mining that data and correlating it by hand, people with Excel spreadsheets to do different things, or there's an Excel spreadsheet up here on a SharePoint site, Please go and fill in your values.
Excel is good.
It is good.
Excel is awesome.
Excel plus SharePoint plus nobody tracking it correctly means for changes that get destroyed by other people. So, you know, I remember those days, and I think we did a much better job this time around.
But I think the whole... You used Excel presumably beforehand. I used Excel hugely when I was managing dev projects to track lists of work items. And we have these tools internally which people have developed to suck the data out of your Excel spreadsheet and push it into bugs in the work item tracking database, the old Product Studio thing. But that's a one-time thing. So, you know, folks like you and me, and then I'd cut and paste, or we'd write complicated queries to pull things into, you know, to do data mining against that stuff. We've learned from all of that stuff, and that's really what's motivated some of the connection that we allow between Excel and the work on
the other thing I just love about Excel is that I am very interested, for instance, in understanding what bugs got fixed and what bugs got entered yesterday. So I've created a spreadsheet that's bound to a query in Team Foundation, and what it's a query that basically says, "Show me all bugs opened yesterday." So I go into Excel, I hit refresh on that query, it refreshes all those, pulls in all the new work items, throws out the ones that were resolved 2 days ago or whenever I looked at it last, and then there's a pivot table that I run off of that, and so it's a real cheap and easy way to do reporting. And
well, you know about my story with reporting as well. but don't get me wrong. So I use the built-in reporting mechanisms that are built into the SQL Cube infrastructure that's there, the intelligence that's there. And the trouble was, at the time I was doing it, we didn't really have an awful lot of sample reports. So I was trying to build it from scratch, just using whatever documentation SQL reporting had and not anything that was specific to Team Foundation to build my reports. But when I did actually get them going, it worked. And many of the pivot tables where I would suck data in Excel and, you know, do that pivot again and make sure the area was right and so on was now just captured in a web page. In fact, I think those might still be up.
So, I mean, I would say that there's a bigger learning curve to writing those reports on top of SQL reporting services.
Absolutely.
But the advantage is that they're an investment because they're available for everyone in the team. The Excel ones are more... Yeah. You know, Jeff and I use them incredibly for tracking bugs, and I'm tracking what the devs are doing, and Jeff's doing the whole big picture. But they're not publishable really very easily.
The other major advantage in that infrastructure is the trending information that is very, very hard to mine with snapshot queries from Excel, right? Yeah. Getting that trend information from that cube is you know, ridiculously easy compared to the old days. I would say that it's...
Where are the edges on the product? What are the things that if we met in 3 years, you would say, oh, they finally fixed it?
Well, so I think we're kind of dancing on one of them, which is reporting. Okay. It is, if you're an expert at Excel, or if you're an expert at reporting off of cubes, it's great. But we expect that the customers that really want to know this information are those that are like project managers that may not have the expertise in those areas. And so they're going to come to the system and go, oh, I really want to know this, and I know what's in there, but I just can't find it. I can't quite get it out. And I think that's an area that we're going to hear a lot about, and we're going to keep working on.
A lot of that we can address with education, though. I think that was my biggest problem, is just that I struggled with, okay, how do I go and find out how to build this report, right? I know what I want to build. It looks kind of like the query I have over here. How do I get that from there to this lovely web page? And I think we can address a lot of that sharp edge with more education and more white papers and so on.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just education white papers, though. I think that's going to solve a lot of the problems. It's not like you're restricted out of the box. You can expect other people to be developing reports.
Oh, absolutely.
So I'm guessing that there are going to be a lot of people out there who have the skills in SQL reporting services who are going to be able to offer services or post reports up on the web of, you know, this is a great report that you can do against the MSF Agile workflow and try those out.
So. One of the best things about even having some of the sharp edges in the product is the openness of the APIs that we have, the object model that we have for people to go and extend it and customize it and add value beyond what we're shipping in the box this time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, when people ask me how extendable it is, I'm like, well, you can do everything that we can do because basically we expose the same web services. So.
We've been commonly referring to our web services as the bacon saver. And every time we run into one of those hard edges, we go, oh, but somebody could write an extension or do something, and we're like, okay, that saves our bacon.
Yeah. So. Actually, I don't think it's quite bacon.
I won't ask you what you think of this.
Well, bacon here isn't quite bacon either, though, right?
No, it's not. <really bacon. laughs>
Talking from the Brits.
How hard was it to move from one system into the new system?
Let's see.
And
so
do you have any tips
it.
On people who are yeah. maybe going to buy your product and try to move their old system into
well,
a new system?
I think there's a lot of to be said for the way that we phased.
Yeah,
that's
what exactly what I was
saying. Is the key, right? Trying to say that there's an entire new development suite and everybody go
yeah.
Would have been near impossible for us to do. And we had to really think about where's our value when we roll this out. Obviously, there's always value back to the team when we're dog fooding. But there has to be some value for the people who are using the tools. So it's all to do with making sure that you phase that in and have a roadmap mm-hmm. written for what's important to you initially. Like it might be, for many people, the server pieces come later. Well, we're obviously shipping the server later, but you know, rolling out a lot of the client tools
yep.
makes sense. A lot of customers are going to get a lot of value out of the testing tools that we have, code profiling, code analysis tools. And for us, we had rolled out code analysis tools, you know, almost from Team System existent, right? Because they're built on existing technology we had inside Microsoft, and that's the same with the profiling tools as well.
Yeah, so you could just pick up work item tracking, for instance.
Right.
And you could be happy with that for a whole year. And you wouldn't realize the benefits of integration with source control or the builds mm-hmm. or whatever, but you might be just happy as clams. And then over time you could pick up maybe just half your team or certain feature teams or whatever, start picking up source control. Maybe they start doing builds. And just over time you start migrating. I think that's much better and much easier because this is a cultural change as well
yeah.
as a technology change to introduce those sorts of things. Having folks out there scouting, finding the pitfalls so that they can help their teams that are following behind say, oh yeah, okay, this is going to be a lot easier because you were down this road before.
There's definitely that cultural impact of...
Yeah, what are the cultural...
Well, there's two things. I think the first thing is that this gives project managers, developer leads, these type of people an awful lot more control on the development process. And that's good for them, but kind of tough for a lot of developers in their organization that were working on the honor system. Many of our policies were honor-based. Thou shalt run code analysis before thou shalt check in, etc.
You know, I think that people see the benefits of those things. There's a cultural shift, but it's the benefits of them are very quickly realized.
There is impact there.
And it's not about control. I'd say that...
Oh, I don't know.
Well...
Talking to customers, there's a lot of... They want a lot more control.
So I think that in their minds it may well be that they see it as control, but actually I think fundamentally what we provide is visibility and transparency.
Right. There's transparency.
And that enables you to make decisions, which is control.
Yeah.
But it's more about transparency and availability of information.
But that's a major concern for customers as well, who have been used to running the development environments without much transparency. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
I tell you that quite honestly from
customers
last week.
But actually, this works. So, I've been speaking to customers, and some of them start out feeling very cautious and worried about the fact that this is going to impose some level of visibility to what they're doing or what they're not doing. And they're worried that people are going to look at what they're doing and say, hey, we don't like it.
Upper management says,
upper management
why aren't you fixing bugs at this rate anyway?
And sure, that is a concern if they're not using the information. But the flip side is also true. So I've been in touch with some customers who are saying, upper management is telling me that I need to do this, and they're getting frustrated because I haven't shipped the product yet. But look at all the work that I'm supposed to be doing, and they keep adding on these new requirements, and they're not being tracked. And how am I ever supposed to ship when these new requirements keep coming in? Mm-hmm. And by using some system, Team Foundation hopefully, to track what's going on and provide visibility across the spectrum, you can then...
So you can control the management.
The key part there is upper management education.
Exactly.
When you have that visibility to upper management, they get educated about what it is you do and how hard it is, and
why is
one bug not the same as another bug?
If you can point to them and say, look, this is where, if when they wander down into your office and say, oh, by the way, you need to do this too, you can say, well, here's the report, these are all the features that are outstanding right now and the work that needs to be done, and look, this is how long it's going to take us until they're done, follow the line, and do you really want us to do this or not?
Yeah. Follow the rabbit.
Yeah, and
that
empowers developers to actually get some control back over spiraling death marches to oblivion when they have just way too much work to do. But so it's about transparency, and what you do with that information is up to you. But I started out, I remember the first team that I was on at Microsoft when the dev manager said, right, you must have a work item associated with every single check-in. And I was really very nervous about that. And for all of these reasons, why did we need one? Weren't we good enough? Why do we need a bug to track my work? Isn't it good enough for me to say it's all done? But actually, you know, I actually very quickly got to a point where I thought it was great because I could I had some traceability. I knew what work I'd been doing. I was able to look at
it. I don't think anyone doubts that, but there was definitely impact to people who all of a sudden got caught when the switch was thrown, right? Mm-hmm. We had trained them for a long time, but still there's these odd occasions where, you know, I'm doing X or doing Y, and all of a sudden policy, when we switch that on, rejects them. There's like shouting, grumbling, your policy made me less efficient. But I think a lot of individual developers forget that their individual velocity is only part of the team velocity, right? That, yeah, we reduced your speed a little, but the team can continue to go at 50 miles an hour or 60 miles an hour. You got slowed down a little bit.
What kinds of policies are you talking about? I know
exactly what John was talking about, really, in terms of making sure that a work item is associated with a bug, making sure code analysis is run, those types of things. Clean build, these types of things are the ones that we're talking about. That, yeah, we had been using the honor system and some other automated systems as well that haven't worked quite so well sometimes. The big G.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
But yeah, you know, when as soon as we put that control mechanism over there, there's, you know, a few dissenters who say you're impacting my personal productivity and this really sucks, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and you know, we've been talking about the policies, but there's also the power of having a regular build that a lot of teams don't have today. Right. And by providing that build either on a very continuous basis, every check-in you get a build, or if it's just every night, there's something very liberating that as you surface the product every day and you go, oh, yeah, it's looking good, or, oh my gosh, I can't believe this thing is so broken.
So the last 2 weeks I've been out in the field, the team build was actually one of the areas where people just don't have anything right
That's
now.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And they don't have that level of transparency in how they're operating. Like, most people have some sort of SCM solution, and they have some process around that.
Yep.
Most people have some sort of work item solution. Yeah. But when I tell them, when you add team build to the mix and you can see, you know, every 3 hours or every night, this is what got done in that build. These are the work items that are associated. These were the code changes. You know, for some sort of development lead or development manager, that's absolutely critical.
Yep.
And then add on to that using the testing tools to understand what the quality is of that given build. What, you know, what does code analysis say about that build?
Yeah.
That's just huge.
The firestorm that went through our team when we finally brought team build online and people could see, oh, here is the list, the definitive list of everything that was checked in for this build, and here's the definitive list of every bug that was fixed. We sent that report around, and it just, everyone was like, oh my gosh, I can see the power of this tool looking at it just in this way. There was no way previous that anybody could ever generate a report like that. We had
three or four different systems.
It was just
and they were
a nightmare.
One of the cool things about the typical problem we've had at Microsoft in the past is you check in your code change, you fix the bug, and then you go to Product Studio and you say, it was fixed in this build, if you remember. Or if you know what numbering system the build lab happens to be using this week, you can go and get that right. And then
QA enjoy trying to figure out each of the different promotion models that we use, right? So we have this promotion model where things move up through the hierarchy, getting closer to release. Well, is it fixed in that promotion level, or is it only my promotion level? That trying to follow that chain is near impossible.
Now, Microsoft doesn't use this system to build Windows yet, right?
That's right.
Could it be?
So that's our goal over time. This version, we won't get there. It's just not That's a huge, huge team with a huge, huge source base, just not possible at this point. But we build Team Foundation every night with our tools.
Yeah.
And so that provides us this level of visibility around change sets and work items that were checked in.
You use that. You look at that.
I look at that every day. I've got it here on my machine right now.
Now, was the entire Visual Studio product built in your tool, or was just the Visual Studio team system?
So we just build Team Foundation using
that.
That's
for
right.
that particular feature, but
that's
we've
right.
built Team System on Team System would be a fair
Absolutely.
Thing to say.
That's right.
But the thing again,
we build
every night
out.
Is Team But the thing,
Foundation.
The thing
we
use Team Build for
when
is
we
Team
were
Foundation.
Building Lab 23 Dev or our private branch with
the private branch, but that was just Team Foundation.
That's true.
Okay.
And so what is, tell me a little bit, and we should have started this at the beginning, tell me a little bit about what Visual Studio Team System is and what the different pieces are and where you fit in there.
Oh, yeah.
Do your thing.
Well, so Team System is a development tool that sits on top of Visual Studio that expands the life cycle, availability of the life cycle tools for our customers. So not just developers now, but we're also bringing in testers, architects, program managers, trying to help people really get a sense of that whole cycle. It's not just about writing code anymore. And so we've tried to look at how teams work together and what sort of tools they need. And this is our first attempt at doing that. And we've taken a lot of the tools internally that we use and tried to make them so that they can that we can deliver them to folks outside. And so, like, John works a lot on the profilers, and those tools have been internal to Microsoft for a while now, but we've finally taken them and made them a retail product.
Yeah.
So it's very exciting because the customers are just totally
I think a lot of customers were concerned about, you know, how mature the product is. And when you go and enumerate, like, you know, we use this technology, what's been used in Microsoft for, you know, 7 or 8 years to build Windows. I mean, the profiler is an example. The last two versions of SQL were shipped using, you know, the basics profiler engine. The work item tracking has its roots in the mechanisms that were used for work item tracking across the whole of Microsoft.
That's right.
You know, this is the kind of scalability that we're talking about.
That's right.
One of the things I was just going to say, I did a presentation yesterday. The way that I see Team System is that our old model at Microsoft with Visual Studio is we help developers write code.
Mm-hmm. Compile, edit, debug.
Yeah. That's what we help people do. We help developers write code. Whereas now, what we're trying to do with Team System is help teams ship software.
I like
that's
that.
The new model that we're
Look
out.
At you.
What a
tagline.
Hey, he's staying in debt. He's not coming to market, okay? No signing anyone else up.
That's nice. I like that.
Yeah, that's
it.
That makes sense. No, that's definitely true.
So, what else are you guys learning from shipping this set of functionality?
Timelines never get easier.
Right.
We always have to do it yesterday.
That's right.
I think for the breadth of product that we're doing this time, it was a very tight development cycle. Mm-hmm. I think I would say that of everybody that was involved and put an awful lot of pressure on the team.
We're learning a lot about shipping server software. This is the first server product from Dev2,
right.
which is a huge deal.
And supporting that.
And supporting that, that's right. There's a whole lot of learning yet to be done around some of this stuff, but we've certainly made great strides. Anybody that tried to install the Beta 1 refresh of WIDB,
well,
which included...
You.
Are you apologizing there?
knows how hard that was, and with Beta 3, which we just shipped for Team Foundation, it's much, much easier.
Yeah, there's
so,
a lot of feedback from the field there, though, so
that's right.
much improved. Yeah.
So we've learned a lot about that deployment process, and it's complicated. Because you're really putting a whole system in place for somebody, not just trying to install it on somebody's laptop.
I think we've also learned, you know, we've not put traditionally as much effort into learning how other teams ship software, right? So, I mean, this was very much about learning the processes that other teams put in place to ship software and making sure that we produce the entire tool set that's going to enable them, no matter what their process is. We're not saying there's one process... This is what you shall follow, and thou shalt ship software. It's
right.
This is the infrastructure. This is the tool set to allow you to work with whatever process works.
And you're talking about studying both the internal Microsoft.
I think
external
as well. I mean, internal. There's definitely different methodologies used. I don't think that you would say that DevDiv does the same development model as Windows or does the same development model as SQL. Although we're kind of close this time in SQL.
Yeah.
but externally, I mean, there's just a wide variety of ways. Talking to customers last week, you know, they were saying, well, how do you deal with this situation? I'm saying, well, that situation never comes up at Microsoft. The business analyst comes to you with a change request. I'm like, no, they don't. I'm real sorry, I can't really give you any guidance on how Microsoft does that, because for me, that doesn't necessarily happen. We had to learn an awful lot about it.
Now the business analysts are writing a blog, and they tell you... Yeah. So you should read Microsoft Monitor, for instance. They tell us what to do all the time.
This release, we introduced ourselves to the MSIT folks. Yeah. There are a bunch of people here at Microsoft writing software for Microsoft to run our business. And we really hadn't done anything with them previous. And now we've got, I don't know, five, six, seven teams that are actively using Team System.
That number's going to...
It's going to blossom very quickly.
We've gotten closer to our developers as well, because traditionally there wasn't an awful lot of web service or web application development done inside Visual Studio, and now we've done that this time, which mirrors closely an awful lot of our developer consumer base is doing there now.
I mean, that's not been easy for us, because we've been building on top of the .NET Framework 2.0, and we've been building on top of UConn, SQL Server 2005. And that's been a moving part.
Has that been challenging, John?
At times.
Sometimes that's been challenging.
I mean,
there
have been.
Don't forget the CRT now.
Yes. I mean, it's good in some senses because, you know, we get to work on the very most recent bits, and we get to influence sometimes some of the changes, and we get to find problems, which is painful. But the great thing is, we get to get them fixed before the product ships. Which not many teams are in a position
to. From a client tools perspective, you know, it enforces us to make sure that everything works seamlessly when the new revisions of all of these core infrastructure components like the CLR, ASP.NET, that we work seamlessly out of the box, right? Changes that they make that impact us, we see it very quickly and we have some resolution there. Although, I don't know, I think this has been one of the biggest projects for developer division ever. So, you know, we learn a lot about just even cross-team communication and the transparency between those teams where maybe we didn't have the best story in previous cycles. Let me try and word it that
way. I think we're now kind of running quite smoothly with that communication coordination across teams, but it didn't start out that way.
Not at all.
That's true.
Because we've got folks in North Carolina and India, Fargo and Copenhagen at the Times as well, and
that's right.
That's all made communication fun. Yeah.
The sun never sets on Team System.
That's a good line. Where was I just thinking? What is it about the daily build that gets teams on track or keeps them on track? I've noticed that in the journalism world, when I'd start join a daily newspaper, actually making the newspaper got easier than being on a newspaper that only shipped every 2 weeks. It's something human about shipping every day.
That's right. Getting to see what you're doing, right? Surfacing your product and making it really visible so that you can provide some feedback.
I mean, I think of it as the pulse, right? It's the health monitor, right? The daily build is your benchmark for...
Am I alive?
Am I going in the right direction, right? Are we shipping, right?
Oh my gosh.
Testing that pulse every day. Are we good? Are we good? Are we better? Are we better?
That's right.
Or are we worse? Are we worse? Which sometimes happens earlier in the cycle. We definitely get...
Sometimes in the middle of the cycle, too.
It allows you to make self-correcting changes on a daily basis rather than on a weekly or a bi-weekly or a basis.
You get much more discipline about the way that you approach the code in terms of... You know that you can't just check in the code and leave it in a bad state. It's got to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can't just...
Yeah, I mean, we have gotten so much better in terms of general build breaks this time compared to somewhere like the 7.0 cycle. I mean, you can remember the
7.0
as well.
What's that?
Oh, Visual Studio 2002.
Okay.
7.0.
Sorry.
Translation.
I still think of it as that too, actually, yeah.
It didn't have a very good code name, did it? It was just 7.0, I think.
Was it Vegas? Or is Vegas the one
that was one of the shells? Oh,
okay.
Oh, we go through the code name calendar. But anyway, there are a lot of build breaks, which results in... The other thing about not having a daily build is that's an awful lot of downtime for an awful lot of people in the division. And we've gotten an awful lot better this time. around. But I mean, it would impact what 600 testers?
Oh,
maybe
that's
two.
Right.
It was a test back then, actually. So in 2002.
So every time a build is broken,
tests
are sitting there going, "Okay,
that's right."
What have
and
we
and
today?
If you only build once a week, then they're you know, if it's broken that week, they have to wait a whole other week. If it's broken one day, life goes on. You'll get the next one. You'll get the next one.
Also, it tends to be harder to fix them.
Yes.
So if you only build once a week, and then you realize the build is busted, what went in? What caused the problem? You don't know.
Right.
Was it
Tuesday,
by the time
Tuesday,
you
Wednesday?
Apply the fix, too much has happened for the fix to be actually valid at that point.
Individual change.
Right.
And some organizations wait until the end of the development phase before they start doing the build they can drop to QA.
Right.
And they then go through this long phase where they're trying to, okay, right, we've got the code in, now we need to see how it all fits together, and it's a painful
interesting. So some customers now...
Not here
using...
at Microsoft.
No.
I've been on teams outside of Microsoft where that was how we started out, and eventually we got to a point where we didn't feel that that was a viable model.
I actually think about that as well as about my time before Microsoft. Like, I learned to write software before I got to Microsoft, but I learned to ship software at Microsoft with it, the process that we have. And, you know, our processes have refined all the way through this cycle as well. And it's hard for us to, when people ask us, how does Microsoft do X, Y, and Z? I'm like, well, we iterate all the time, we improve these processes. I could give you a snapshot of what we're doing right now, but we're constantly evaluating, is this the right thing? We're growing, we're changing how teams interact, and we always look at, is our process right?
So that, I mean, that's a good point. When I first joined Microsoft, I assumed that there was going to be a big book. I was like, this is how the team runs, and this is how the software process is followed. This is the methodology that everyone at Microsoft adheres to. And so I started scouring around the intranet for the big red book, and I just couldn't find it.
Hey, when you find that, could you email that to me? I'd love to read that one.
I mean, I think the thing that the reason we don't have that is because there is actually a cultural process that we all follow that is a kind of underpinning to the way that we do things. But every team adjusts what they are doing on the basis of what's working now and what's not working well. Where are we at in the cycle? What's the right thing for us to be doing? And people are always prepared to be critical, to take feedback, to say, actually, we started out doing this and it worked for a time, but right now it's not working anymore, so let's stop doing it. So.
And the other nice thing about working at Microsoft, of course, is that not only do we get good ideas from DevDiv, but we can also go, if we've got, like, how do other teams solve big problems like this, like dependencies or builds or whatever? We'll go over to Office, we'll go to Windows and say, how are you guys doing this? And we're stealing good ideas from them, and they're stealing
and
good ideas from us.
Hopefully, giving them good ideas. Yeah. We come up with good ideas, too.
Sounding a little defensive there, John.
Word on the street is, you know, I've seen it. So, yeah, we come up with good ideas.
Oh, funny.
Well, cool. Anything else we should talk about? The process of building software and using Visual Studio Team System? Things you guys do.
I'm just super pumped about our dog food ecosystem. It would not have been nearly as good if we hadn't done that. Mm-hmm. We've got over 500,000 files in our system,
that's
and 60,000 work items in the system, and that's really given us the confidence to ship great software. And I know as Eric goes out in the field and talks to customers, he's able to say, hey, look, we're really using this internally. You know, you should have no fear.
The constant thing is can I bet my business? Can I bet my development operation on Team System? And when you say, well, we bet 500 people, 150 developers on this system to manage it, to make us ship this software, that's bigger than a lot of the people that are coming and talking to us and going, oh, okay. I don't need to worry. Okay, my 20 developers should be okay. I'm good to go.
That's right.
So, you know, it just gives us a different level of confidence in what we're shipping.
How many more versions before you do get the Windows team to use your stuff?
Well, let's see. We're actively working with them to understand the roadmap there. Obviously, Windows Vista is, you know, they've got their process settled.
You're not messing with that.
We're not messing with that at all.
But that actually talks to customers as well. It's just that there's a timing aspect to how you deliver this, right? You can't say, we're just going to shove this in just now. Oh, you've only got 1 month to ship. So for certain teams like, you know, Vista and where they are in their development cycle, you know, the impact on all the developers and that whole group would be painful for them. There's just no doubt, you know. That's right. No change comes without any impact, you know, with no impact. So you have to be considerate of where you are and what makes sense at what time as you roll it out. Sorry, back to...
No, that's right.
You were going to talk about the Windows roadmap.
I was, and I'm not sure I understand the whole roadmap, but I do know that we're working with them pretty closely to say, okay, so given this V1 product, what else do you need to have in there? And they've identified a whole series of things, a lot of them around the fact that they're a much larger team that have many interdependent moving parts that they need to be able to track. So a lot of, kind of project management stuff, as well as some scaling around the use of source control. And so we're trying to make sure that we're all clear on that so that we can get those features into V2 if possible, or something beyond that. But
I mean, they're already running into challenges with some of the internal tools that they've used because of the scale that Vista has gotten to beyond what Windows has. Yeah. So, you know, there's some major challenges for them anyway. And, you know, we're hoping that they'll get it solved.
What we need to do is learn from the deployments that we've got right now internally. Our sites are fairly and squarely on Windows and Office and making sure that we can service those organizations. But what I don't want to do is throw all of our stuff at them and then have Windows ground to a halt because there's a bug in there that we haven't found yet.
Would be bad. Well, and we always have to balance this internal versus external need. We want to make sure that we service and provide good value to our customers that are these 20, 30, 40, 50 people organizations.
Yeah.
And so we want to make sure that the product scales, it's easy to use for those little guys as well.
Yeah.
That's where the rubber hits the road.
And that's the hard thing for a product marketer, I mean, somebody who designs products, right?
Yeah, designer.
Yeah, product designer, right? Well, marketing is part figuring out who the customer should be.
So are you a designer? You can all guess about whether a marketer should be designing products or not.
Well, a lot of people think marketers are just doing
marketing.
Former
marketing guys did, remember, you know, he just moved to marketing.
Thank you.
But your point was.
But my point is, how do you decide what the customer is, you know, and particularly when you have...
Well, I can talk to a lot of that because we spent a lot of time in focus groups early on because for a lot of us, this was new territory. We had all of our internal tools and we had our process and tools kind of tightly coupled. They were built to support that process and so on. So that was sitting down with just a whole lot of customers and doing interviews and understanding and, you know, doing these yellow sticky exercises where they would post up what their process is and, you know, what phases of the development cycle are you doing these types of activities and what do you do? And so, you know, I remember a long, long period of doing those, certainly for the client tools, and I assume the same was happening.
That's right. And that's underway right now for the next version.
Absolutely.
We
never stopped that. That's continual, right? We're always gathering that data, always trying to understand, you know, where are any of our holes at the moment? How are we going
to
make sure?
I was super impressed when I joined the team to see the level of planning that had gone on to address customer scenarios. A lot of teams, you know, they're designing products to meet customer needs, but just how deep folks had gone to try and understand the scenarios and the ways that people would use the tool.
I think one of the biggest
needs.
Things in developer division as well as our use of a core usability team. Mm-hmm. We use consistently, we have usability labs where we bring people in and we say, here's what we've built so far, and this is the scenario.
Wow.
Go use it, and then you watch people use it.
In fact, we have some
it.
Videos coming up of
some of my very harrowing first experiences at Microsoft of watching people just, you know, not be able to use something that I'd built, and trying to not buy on the glass and say no, right click, and of course, you know, it's a hard lesson to realize that. Oh, what I wrote actually isn't usable. Oops. So, you know, going back and taking that feedback to heart and going, okay, right, we really need to rethink what we've done here,
right.
You know,
from
what usability has shown us. It's a pretty powerful message when you put the video up there, the user just losing themselves, going way off a different track, can't achieve the task that they were trying to do. It's a hard, hard thing to see, but...
Yeah, and geeks always go down a different path, right? Because we're used to the computer.
But having said that, you know, even internally, the dog fooding is not just about testing out the server. We got a lot of usability feedback. And I remember during the first few weeks when you guys had started using the work item tracking. We had an alias, an email alias that he would send email to saying, why the heck?
What did you do it like that for? What were you thinking?
And part of that is because people were already used to the internal tools and they were adjusting to a new paradigm, but part of it was because...
we just hadn't thought about it.
We hadn't thought about some of those issues, and we took that feedback and made it into the product. So.
Well, cool. Well, thanks for spending some time with me and giving me some there's the phone. giving me some inside look at your teams and sort of the dog fooding process and sort of the feedback you've learned.
Good.
It was an interesting hour. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, guys.